whether his message was, you know, technically correct or not, doesn't really matter. It was just fascinating to see the reaction.
Yes.
Like, I'm open-minded enough to kind of take in, yeah, we should become extinct in 10 years. I can entertain that.
Yeah.
And those people did not have an open enough mind to even think that was possible.
I know.
That's the key. That was the key piece and why you tossed it out at us to begin with.
Yes.
Like, what was fascinating was the people's reaction.
Like, if you would have stood out there and said, listen, you're just maggot, you're just bacteria, and you're going to get eaten by maggots soon.
Yeah.
It would be like, no! It would have had, like, the same response, like, no, but really, that's going to be
I like the suicide warning he has on his website.
Oh, not to commit suicide.
Well, he's not. No, actually, he doesn't say that. He just says, like, don't rush into it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but if you want to, I support that. Here's some, like, literature.
Wow.
I wonder, like, how many people have iced themselves. When they say, like, oh, you got 10 years to live and you just run off and kill yourself. Like, I don't know.
Anything's possible.
But I guess the person who did to do that might, you know, have some predilection towards suicide to begin with.
I don't think his message would necessarily turn you into a committed suicider. You know, you'd mull it over, then you'd habituate to it, and then you'd forget about it. So if someone does actually go out and commit suicide.
You have kids. You have to think of
it. Yeah?
It's all different.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were even actually, well, I think these people were just talking about, like, when it gets real bad, but they were talking about different ways, like, I think they were talking about using helium or something.
Yeah, uh-huh. Helium, yeah.
We've covered that.
No, we got that. Yeah, we got the tank and the...
Yeah, we all have the tank. We got the night sky.
The tank and the hood. We're all
we
set.
Them out occasionally.
Yeah, it's a night sky sauna do-yourself-in kit. Yeah, we sell them on the website.
But you sell string.
You know, what's his name? The Apple guy who's actually the genius, Wozniak,
right.
He like, sold all his shit and moved, right?
Yeah.
Other people, like, quit all their jobs. And so, like, people take it serious enough.
There's no question.
You know, I think the right person probably would go through with killing themselves with that.
There's people with money and means that have, you know, bunkers and stores.
Yeah, sold all the stuff currently and is preparing for, you know, a meltdown or something.
That's what
he sought advice from McPherson. Yeah. McPherson told him to live in the southern hemisphere. He moved to Tanzania, and then all the fires broke out in Tanzania. So it was like bad advice.
Anybody, like, it's really funny. I was reading all the Fukushima, like, crazy warnings, whatever, and then you, like, get way down the bottom. Mm-hmm. It's like, and someone invented a new carbon filter that can filter all the radiation out and put the water back in, you know, clean. And I was
right.
Like, well, there, I don't know. There's kind of a, you know, a step in. And nobody knows what the hell.
Well, you know, you could say that the ongoing complexity of industrialization in all the ways that it has become complex and driven by, you know, profit rather than sustainability. Yeah, I mean, you're going to hit a wall at some point, right? You're going to hit a gotcha or a million of them along the way. If that technology and the deployment of that technology is not, what can you say, intelligently, conservatively evaluated.
Continuously just used to kill each other.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, too, like, by 2030, you know, how many more countries will have nuclear technology if you have to worry about, like, an actual disaster, you know? It's just... Mm-hmm.
In terms of a warhead disaster or an energy meltdown.
Yeah, well, either.
Like, yeah.
Mainly warhead.
Warhead, yeah.
I think a lot of that, like, grows out of, like, a, you know, a sort of a self-hatred for the human and the human condition and the world that's constructed out of that, and people just can't deal with the way things really turn out.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of a complex love-hate relationship we have with consciousness itself.
I don't think you can put your finger on any of it. Like, you really can't say we're really fucked or, yeah, it's all going to work out fine. You just don't know.
Yeah.
And it's a lot. It's just more accurate to say, I really can't, have no idea.
Yeah.
I'm just living what's in front of you.
I like that. Yeah.
And what I do know is the pizza tastes really good. We got, like, a nice spread. We're good.
We're good, yeah. Right. Keep it simple.
Beer. Mm-hmm. Can't beat it.
Yeah. Want a plate? I'm
getting off my perch. What?
Plate? Napkin?
No, I have a plate. Thanks.
Excuse me.
I have a napkin. It's good. It's good today. I'm just kind of.
What's cocoa that? Rooms to go with your eyes?
I'm a little rough since Christmas stuff.
What are cocoa rooms?
There are
bite sized super cookies.
Oh my. Nice. Cocoa, does that mean cocoa nut?
There's coconut and cocoa. Moderately sweet. It's pretty good for you.
Oh, boy.
He's diving in, baby.
Well, the encouragement that you might hear from a sage, if you were lucky enough to run into one, I would say is, as you know, as profoundly radical, perhaps more so in certain respects, than, you know, McPherson's extinction prediction.
Yeah, it's going extinct right now.
Yeah, so, you know, we're very much more or less easily and agreeably sanguine with what we take to be the routine of, you know, my or our human consciousness. We live our so-called lives according to the skills and means, various degrees of, you know, maturity and capacity that we have. And, you know, cope with the vicissitudes and bullying that we may suffer from large and small petty tyrants. And we may even fit progressive lifestyle choices in as concerns diet, exercise, meditation, or recreational drug use.
the first three.
Yeah. You know, and try to eke out as much, you know, satisfaction and novelty, affection as we can. An interesting point that, you know, McPherson has made, and of course others of that, of a more progressive sociological or anthropological ilk, is how so-called civilization has monetized the natural world. So we have monetized food, we've monetized land, we for sure have monetized fresh water. And in China, you could get a hit of New Zealand air for 80 cents. So now we've monetized air.
Really? Good job.
It is surreal dystopia. And in the, you know, so-called modern industrialized way of living, we work to earn enough money if we're not already independently wealthy by virtue of, you know, birth or other privilege and or lottery winnings or, you know, skilled stock market investing. We work in exchange for an arbitrary medium, what we call the holy grail of the coin of the realm. And that becomes the exchange medium so that our labor produces enough capacity to consume, to purchase everything that has been commoditized and made by institutions that at best we can either work for or own a share of.
And get paid shit.
And in many cases get paid shit. Yeah. Yeah. So the curious unfolding maturation sine wave or arc of industrial society, really is a very curious autobiography. And at 7-point-something billion, whether on either a flat or a round Earth, depending on how you see things, who knows? The species and the systems that the species has created or produced or has agreed to, you could say, have their own karma.
I'm glad I'm not a cow.
Yeah.
Or more than a pig.
Yeah, having an opposable thumb, a neocortex, being on the top of the food chain, in some respects doesn't suck. Yeah. But it also doesn't necessarily insulate or protect us from, all kinds of stress. So the, in comes the message from the sage, which is absurd. It's absurd and it's impossible and it's stupid and untrue and I don't believe it and I'll find a million reasons to, resist and marginalize that message.
No matter what it is?
Well, yeah, pretty good point. No matter what it is, I'm against it. Mm-hmm. You're right. Whatever it is, I'm against it.
That's why we like you.
Yeah.
Question everything.
So you take on the adventure of unmasking the nature of conformist reality, the nature of consciousness itself. And therefore the, phantasm of geopolitical symptoms becomes, secondary to your way of thinking, to your way of living. And though, we've been around for however many, moments or years or thousands or tens or hundreds of thousands of years, that break with conformist reality is no less thrilling and arduous and incapacitating as it's ever been. In other words, the message of the sage is quite durable, has legs, despite how few, if we could measure it, and that's hard to do, how few humans actually embrace that message. You see. If Facebook is a measure of popularity or whatever, you see, spiritual and self-help celebrities and pundits of all kinds and styles earn incredible, you know, an incredible loyalty base. Whether that's Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, Ram Dass and his throngs, or our friend Bentinho Massaro, Wayne Dyer, you know, Sadhguru, right? I mean, it's mind-numbing, right? How many celebrities and orators, philosophers and entertainers, I mean that in a good way, there are for us to, you know, get a message, to have a vicarious experience, a vicarious insight of one kind or other. It's kind of like we have to make something or someone holy. You could say we're almost wired, right, in a way, to make something or someone, some message, holy, so that we can get in line and participate in the the belief system, in the cosmology, in the authority, and the consequences of failing to follow or obey that authority.
And you can blame everything on the authorities, so that works.
You can. Yes, you can.
Good enough reason to create anything.
Yeah.
Because I can blame everything on it then.
It's easily done. Though we can't tell the future, that's a good thing. Maybe that's what makes this so interesting, actually. Who knows, we might be more likely to suicide if we all became, right, prescient and able to foretell the future, including the unfolding of our own lives and or it, you know, their demise, good, bad, or indifferent. We'd be like, oh, okay, I see it all, and... You know,
no thanks,
or I'm done, or no big deal.
Part of what you saw said, oh, yeah. By the way, when you kill yourself, you can't get out of this. And you're like,
okay. Yeah, that's right. If you were given that advice, you'd be like, damn it. Oh, so you know the future and you're forced to live it out because killing yourself would be a worse outcome.
Or it just doesn't do anything at all.
Oh, boy.
Kind of like Groundhog Day.
Yeah, it's definitely Groundhog Day. Yeah.
Well, in some ways we do know the future in terms of, to all apparent indications, you know, we're all going to die. And that's sort of like the worst.
I don't know.
Or maybe not. But,
yeah.
You know, we kind of know that part.
Well... You know, there's no and there's no, right? We can enjoy vegan and meat-friendly pizza and a glass of beer and be confident in the knowledge that, yes, someday we'll die. But none of us have been recently diagnosed with multiple instances of bone and other forms of opportunistic cancer, going through radiation, chemotherapy, and now dwelling in a halfway or a rehabilitation facility. That's a different kind of knowledge, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a different kind of knowing.
So he's in rehab?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
And Horsham.
She shifted into chemo, bigger chemo mode. And
well, that's good.
You see, if you want in, there's suffering, there's consternation. If you want out, well, there's suffering, there's consternation.
What do you want for nothing?
Yeah, I mean, that's the string. That's the string that you pull on if you've encountered the message of the sage. Now, the impossibility of it, the formidable impossibility of wanting nothing for nothing, is what you could say a salon like this is about. You could say confronting, playing with, exploring and experimenting with the impossibility of wanting for nothing. Because the animus and the, you know, lovely, infuriating forcefulness of you being you is so good at conjuring a superstructure for your identity and for the presumption of your continued identity or the presumption of your past or the way in which we negotiate with and navigate in our own imagination to optimize the day or optimize a relationship or make more money if we need to or enjoy less if we can get away with it or securitize our life, securitize our future in all the ways that we do sensually and psychologically and emotionally in all respects. Sometimes
to prevent or minimize the next insult.
Yeah.
That we're gonna be.
That's right. Prevent, minimize, or accelerate and get on with, right?
Yeah, well, that's probably a better thing.
Yeah. So this you could say, a habit of minimization or acceleration of events and circumstances that enhance us or threaten us is the, the way we live.
Does the tea have caffeine, Dave?
It's regular orange pico, red rose. Yeah.
Now this formidable but somewhat thrilling conundrum, you could say, is what what's called spiritual inquiry is about. That's the curious paradox.
There's just not many discussions that kind of take the avoiding the next insult or making me safe off the table.
Yeah.
That's why this is different.
Yeah.
Most of them, that's the main course.
Yes.
Here we'll make you safe. Make you feel better.
Right. Because we are so enamored, pleasantly or unpleasantly, with the inertia of what we call our lives, well, then that's how we tend to communicate or socialize or participate in a salon, whether it's one like this or all of the kinds of salons that occur, right, on a Sunday morning or a Friday night or a Saturday or several times a day when you're praying to Mecca or receiving messages from disembodied authorities on the matter. Then there are the, you know, the enthusiasts that encourage law of attraction and positive thinking and reinforcement and pampering yourself with yoga and acupuncture and massage and ear candling, neti, nasal washing, trips to Sedona.
What is it, ear candling?
That's a new one for you?
Yeah.
No, we'll do a sidebar.
Wax in, wax out. Wax
in, wax out. Yeah. So, you know, that's the world of the, right, of the healer, the intervener, the, right, are all the things that we can do, all the novelties that we can do, participate in to create, you could say, satisfying or clarifying or cleansing, right, events. Yeah. You know, like psyllium seed and apple juice and herbs so that you can poo with gusto. And move that mucosal lining in the bowel straight out of there so you can go pink again. I've done it. It's fun. So we have, really, we are inundated with no end of distraction and justifiably fun and interesting things to do as concerns my body, my mind, my emotions, my life, my spiritual well-being, my capacity to attract and manifest what I want, to protect myself with a cocoon of white light so that I can't be fucked with, by unfriendly disembodied spirits that want to inhabit my soul. They can have it. Really, it's mind-boggling. And yet, in any given day, what we call a 24-hour period, where we're awake a little more than we're asleep, right? 16 on, 8 off, 16 on, 8 off, or some variant of that. Some people get 4 hours of sleep and then muddle about, you know. Yeah. So in the course of a so-called day, I mean, we really have only so much time and vitality to do, you know, what we can do, given that some of it's used for sleeping and grooming, eating and eliminating, getting to and from the workplace, and then being constructively at the workplace to take home the coinage so that we can maintain our Hulu subscription.
Then you need time to watch Hulu.
Then you must have time to watch Hulu. There's no point in having as many subscriptions as many of us have without even enjoying the fruits of those subscriptions. Yeah. And then, of course, there's the thrill of doing your personal bookkeeping and balancing your checkbook and lamenting about how little you have and how little you've earned and how fucked you are as you get older and have nothing to rely upon for your ongoing financial sustenance. Oh, it's just so much fun.
It sucks to think it's really all money. No matter how much you have going for you, it's not enough.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you're on pretty shaky legs when you think it's all up to you.
Yeah. Unless you're, unless you're Steve Wozniak, I guess. And you have the privilege of picking the optimal place to live longer than the next guy, only to see that the forests are burning down and you've made a bad mistake.
It's funny how this is like the uplifting meeting after like finding out that McPherson like was wrong most likely and we're all not going to die.
Yeah.
This is like the celebratory.
This is the celebration. Yeah, a little pizza, a little beer. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's not too good. It's, you know, essential.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, you know, it's one of the reasons
I just jumped right over to Fukushima, so there was no time to waste for me.
Yeah.
One disaster after another.
It's one of the reasons the Buddhists have one practice in contemplating your death every day.
Uh-huh. I don't have time to do that.
Nor the flexibility to bend over
to follow.
Yeah, I've lost that a long time ago.
You have tomorrow.
No.
Assured.
Yeah.
And living as if it is assured instead of living.
Yeah.
Living.
You know, until
something happens.
Yeah. How many people do you know, including yourself, depending on how well you know yourself or are even, you know, able to report meaningfully on your, how many people do you know have spent a good amount of time following that Buddhist edict to contemplate their death on a, you know, robust routine basis?
Guy McPherson, that's it.
Maybe there's one guy. Yeah, maybe the guy's the guy. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's the guy. We're going to fucking die. I'm going to go get some grief counseling and start a blog and live accordingly. Yeah.
Or it could be some form of relief from, again, the questing, the it'll be better tomorrow. Or
yeah.
I'm going to plan for something.
Yeah.
And
Every commitment that one makes to themselves to carve out and fashion the ideal, call them resolutions, with or without New Year's, right? That I'm now going to conduct myself on, I'm going to recommit to my meditation practice, to my contemplation of death practice, to my, you know, the promises I've made to myself around diet and around exercise, contemplation, socializing, being out there, the artist's way, right? Following the five or the XYZ precepts so that I'm not engaging in gossip and I'm not engaging in, you know, media consumption and I'm not having polyamorous sex without commitment.
Yes, the secret has a book yet for him.
when it might
got to focus
clearly.
when it might turn out that all of those are actually better for you than not. You know, follow the precepts of your longing, let's say, rather than ones manufactured by a you know, a small fearless Vietnamese guy.
Yes, the tantra.
And all of his hoodlums. Bald hoodlums. Yeah. I don't know what the fuck to do. You know, you may as well throw a dart at a board and then not do that. Or, you know, do it. Or don't do it. I mean, or don't throw the dart. You know, put the dart in your own head and call it a day. fuck. Yeah. So, I mean, we are kidding ourselves in a kind of a Shakespearean tragedy way to imagine that we have control or preference or that by recommitting to the things that we have been told are good for us, that we'll actually do those things and or reap the benefits of those things, and for how long, and with what degree of regularity, and I mean, I got nothing to show, and I'm probably not alone. I might be afraid that everyone else at the fucking Star Group and Pebble Hill and Circle of Miracles and Susan, you know, what's her face?
Duvall Seminars.
Susan Duvall Seminars and all of the other whack fucks within, you know, 20 miles of here. They're all, I mean, they got something to show. You know, they're happy. They've had marvelous experiences hugging trees. They've bent spoons. They've done Palladian healing levels 2, 3, and 5. Then they went back to do, you know, shamanic cleansing. They've all eaten towels and pulled it out of their ass. You know, I mean, I got nothing to show, but they are just rocking this fucking spiritual thing. They're rocking it.
Where's the group where you eat a towel?
Oh, that's, yeah, that's...
I mean, I'm a...
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, oh, we can start a group, Towel Eaters Anonymous.
Taking cleansing to the next.
Hi, I'm Jeff. I've got a towel in me.
You put, like, spaghetti up your nose and talk about your
Hi,
mouth,
Jeff.
But I don't know if you can eat a towel. I guess it has to come out.
Yeah, you do. It's a yogic thing. It's a 20-foot-long, whatever, silk towel.
It's and like putting the noodle and doing that.
Instead of fucking around with your sinuses, that's you pull extreme. This one all the way through your ass. Yeah.
Yeah.
You eat it, and the way, because it's silk, the hydrochloric acid won't destroy it. It'll go all through your intestines, and then one fine day, while you're pooing, it's like, there it is.
Voila.
There it is.
Magic.
So you, and so you've got some of it in your mouth and some of it hanging out your ass. You're not the best date. but I'm sure someone will love you.
But there's strings attached.
There's strings attached.
Now I can't eat this.
Yeah, really.
Sure,
my appetite's gone.
Subject changes. Sure,
Let's
swim out of this lagoon.
Fuck.
Oh, wow.
So we encounter all kinds of spiritual and self-help and gifted authorities and mentors in all kinds of disciplines, thinking that what they've accomplished something, that they have something to show for what they've done?
They just believe their stories that they're doing it. Like, the difference between them and anybody else is, or there's this monster divergence between everything that's going on and the story, and you start to see the story is just, you're just trying to keep up with what the fuck is really, it seems to be really going on with, like, descriptions and reasoning, and I'm doing it.
You can look
just bullshit.
Yes, you can look at the compulsive videos that someone like Deepak Chopra puts out, maybe daily. I mean, he's always has to have his face, you know, in a camera, selling something that he's either published or written or participated in, or that he'll sell you through his subscriptions or his Ayurvedic, you know, da-da-da-das, or his, you know, the drill of getting certified.
Whatever the marketing genius
right,
is
getting certified. Byron Katie will certify you, and Deepak Chopra will certify you. Thich Nhat Hanh will certify you. You know, everyone will certify you. You can earn credentials pretty much from anyone if you hang in there long enough and pay the fee.
Am I the only one who thinks that when Deepak talks, like, he's just doing a fake accent for show?
No, I feel it too.
Yeah, he's really like, he was raised here, like, some well-to-do suburb.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Seems a bit much recently. Here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's really like that movie where the kid like painted his face to get into college.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Oh my god!
I mean, maybe because he's so well spoken and enunciates so clearly, and it's like, you know, even if that was your original accent, I'm sure you could probably lose almost all of it. But that's like part of the
no question.
Kind of thing.
Sure, no question. Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to, you know, be all Hindi on this thing. But it's, you see how easily we fall under the sway of one or a thousand authority figures in all realms of you know, chronic input, whether it's the talking heads in the media or the repugnant politicians. Or, you know, those that are fighting for our, you know, so-called progressive values, or those that are fighting to repress and suppress LGBTQ rights, or the black vote. You know, so all of these loyalty systems that we have are based on self-interest, fear, right? We, they, conflict, division. privilege, exploitation, manipulation, on and on and on and on. And even though, of course, the greater geopolitical strata is rife with this, well, so am I. So am I. You know, in my own mind, right?
Like a mirror.
Yeah.
What you see is what you get.
So what's the what is the thrilling and infuriating message from the, you know, from the sage?
Depends on the sage.
Yes, it for sure depends on the sage.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it depends on the filter you have when you hear it.
Absolutely. I mean, the message spoken or written or broadcast in one or a thousand ways, and the message that you hear or derive from it is, right, pure serendipity.
The one I'm thinking of right now is you can't make a whole more whole. You can't make one more one. Yeah.
Yep. And you know, if we've studied a little bit and meditated a little bit and read a little bit, we too can come up with quite a litany of one-liners, right? Spiritual one-liners and religious one-liners and.
Well, I know I walked into that one.
Posters. Yeah. And that's what they are. Whether I've come to some insight that I want to share with everyone, or whether you have an insight that you're sharing with me, or whether, you know, it's a motivational poster, at the Del Valle lunchroom, be positive, treat each other with respect. Sorry about the loud, annoying music. We're not going to turn it down.
You tried, but you didn't do it.
But the sign says, treat everyone with respect. No, we insist that the music be so loud that you can't really communicate with the people that you want to have lunch with. Oh, well, I must have misread the sign.
Where's a cone of silence? My mistake.
You can't disrespect anyone if you can't hear anyone.
Well, good point. That's right.
I wonder how many non-students eat there on a daily basis.
It's just us.
Yeah.
No, it's just us.
And nuisance. We are.
Nuisance.
So cop already came in, checking us out.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Many times.
Asking for ID.
Just eavesdropping, casually sitting next to us. Like, I'm just here, randomly sitting down next to you, one chair over.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing going on here.
Mm-hmm. If someone invited us to be honest with ourselves, where would we even begin?
Well, honesty depends on the day.
It depends on a thousand things.
Mm-hmm. You have to have some kind of reference point.
None of which I have any control over or, you know, even preference.
That whole, like, figuring out what makes me tick and unraveling, it just changes with the wind.
Yeah.
I am
right.
Totally undependable.
Absolutely.
And
yes. I would like to take your advice, but first I would like to put a chopstick in your eye. Then we can talk about it. So there's a motive. There's a hidden motive to carrying on this way, right? A recent talk from our dear friend Peter just goes right into the, you know, razor sharp message of the sage, which is kind of fun to do. But you can see the conversation that follows even such a, succinct, brief portrayal tends to be about, right, anecdotal, metaphoric nonsense. Because it is very challenging to communicate and hang out, loiter in a call it a somewhat rarefied quality of consciousness, because our habit goes back to, right, the portrayal of nonsense, which is what I am. I mean, I'm the ongoing portrayal of absolute nonsense. And if you ask me, be true to yourself, you know, be authentic, I'd like to, but I'm clueless. I'm down with that. I'm not resisting or trying to, but I don't know how.
Again, you need a reference point, right?
Something.
What is authentic and what is inauthentic?
I don't know. That depends on how much you're paying your therapist and what they think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Depends on how you feel verifying your identity in the moment.
In the moment, it's a lot of it has to do with how you feel like validating and verifying your identity right about now, given my hormonal condition, whether I'm hot, cold, well-fed, one or several beers, no beers, or whether I like you and maybe we could get it on if I give you the right answer. Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you whatever truth you want to hear. Right? Either to get out of here or so that we can go to the next step.
I cheat and steal to get what I want.
Exactly.
The American.
So, the... If I could say for me, and that's just nonsense, of course, but the reason to play in this... call it conversational realm in this way, I would say raises the bar on a quality of, let's just say simplicity, a simplicity which sees the enormity, the very creative, very demanding, very insistent, improvisational enormity of absolute bullshit that I am, that I'm made out of, that my consciousness, you could say, thrives on.
Well, your consciousness, the bullshit is just a story you tell yourself trying to keep up with all the shit that seems to be going on. It's like the story, it's like after the fact, it's just going and going like, oh, this is why I did this and this is what I'm going to do next. And it's just crap.
Yes.
You can only really... live in what's happening, and what's happening you have zero control over. It's just happening.
Yeah. You're channeling Naho.
I've seen a description of confusion as thinking, oh, it's confusion when you're trying to have control over something that is chaos. A lot of confusion. In this world, most of this world is just confusion. Yeah, I'm going to get up tomorrow and I'm going to do this, this, and this.
You don't even have to go to Redner's to see that. No.
Lots of confusion.
We are also very skilled at assimilation and co-opting anything that shows up in my field as a philosophical or spiritual or other, call it, you know, vector or curiosity meme, and having a, right, in having a one-liner, turning it into a conclusion.
It's me.
Turning it into a sticky note.
I'm doing it.
Turning it into, I'm so sure about, of myself, now that I have said this brilliant, pithy remark. Yeah. But I mean, why do we go see, you know, XYZ and so and so and so and so talk and talk and talk and thrill us and nourish our inner child and relieve us of guilt and shame and bring us to spiritual catharses, and I take the mic and, right, I sit in silence and I chew 40 times and I, right, you're like, oh my God. And we continue to enroll and sign up for these experiences according to our means and our free time and what we can afford to do and, you know, what pleases us. I mean, going to any one of the dive bars here in town and being a regular, you know, a 7-night-a-week regular there is as good as going on retreat. You know. I mean, so what if the alcoholism is killing you? Everything else is.
Either way,
everything else is.
You're looking for something.
Yeah.
Not quite sure.
I don't know. I mean, is Paul Hederman really all that much better off being sober all these years? Hard to say. He might insist on it, but...
It kind of looks like people die a lot quicker.
Well, there you go.
If they're of that ilk and decide to hang out in the bar.
Well, if you're a card-carrying McPhersonite, you'd say that was the, you know, that was the better way out. There's a lot to be discovered, or maybe just one thing to be discovered by considering who you think you are and what you think you're about. And how you, I, we, this justifies its existence and its ethical standards. Low carbon footprint, and you know, how we are doing on the kindness meter or the compassion meter. Like, you know, so we're pretty much, you could say for good reason or no reason at all, invested in how this goes down, right? Day in and day out. And shit, I'm not on antidepressant meds. Fuck, I'm better than halfway good, considering how many people are on, right, antipsychotic medications of one kind or a thousand kinds. I'm like, well, I'm doing pretty good. Yeah. And if I'm, you know, suffering from, as many of us do, apparently, you know, from pride and self-importance, bargaining, you know, denial, and all the things that we do to get through a day and the way that we get through a day, I guess we're okay or not okay. And I mean, you're okay, I'm okay, you're not okay, I'm not okay, we're all okay and we're not okay. Okay. Yeah. You suck and I'm better than you. Well, that feels good, but not for long, because then I'm going to be lonely, you know. Right. So I kind of really would rather just suck right along with you so I could at least have a friend.
Plus your cat.
And, you know, and then you can, you know, you can become irritable with any kind of conversation that doesn't seem to hammer, you know, the Ramana Maharshi party line or the Peter Brown party line or the this or that party line. If you're not hammering that shit, then, you know, we can be impatient. Because I don't want to talk about politics and the world and extinction and, you know, geopolitics. I don't want to talk about things that, you know, enroll and engage me in my own, you know, fantasy and disappointment. I'm hoping that spiritual conversation is where I get upliftment, where I get, you know, nourishment and nurture, where I can say, boy, it was really worth going out on that snowy fucking evening to have a vegan slice and a Yingling. And fuck you.
Sounded a lot like the dad on Family Guy.
Do
the voice, Peter.
Oh, God.
Thank you.
If there were something worth knowing, well, good luck with that. I mean, to sell or suggest that there is a you know, a quality of reality that's somehow durable, reliable, and true, that relieves suffering, that is the way things really are, right? And you should stop flitting about with your own ridiculous self so that you can fucking get on board with this reality. Fuck you. And yet you can certainly structure with all due confidence and so-called compassion a view that pretends to emanate some kind of sacred authenticity, contrast that sacred authenticity with the way that we typically live or conduct our lives, and then create an encouragement, if not a subtle shaming vector, as to whether you are on board with this sacred subtlety or you're sanguine being an idiot. And so far it seems like the latter is really winning.
This seems like especially relevant because normally if I were to think back to the things I did in the past, it'd always be like, you know, oh, I wish I had done something like more productive to like better myself in the long term instead of just seeking some instant gratification. But the first one I was really, you know, able to just be like, you know what, like I can forgive and have accepted accept myself for having done all these things and enjoyed myself in that moment. And like whatever I was doing back then, like I deserved, you know, all the instant gratification I got.
Sure. Yeah.
Because it's like just pure selfishness to think that like, oh, that, you know, person that I was back then should have suffered and done more to like help myself in the present. It's like,
yeah. Who asked you?
It's like, oh, I want more now. It's just like pure just selfishness.
It's
that selfish bastard, you know.
Yep. I know him well. Yeah. We you could say, often are influenced by or live under the shadow of a superego that imagines that he, she, or it has our best interest at heart and can lay down, some tracks that we can or should follow to up the quality of one's so-called experience. Oh, fuck that.
That's the ongoing story. I will keep you safe.
Yeah.
I will help you. I'll make you feel better.
Yeah.
I'll make your experience better. It's the fucking lie.
If you
look at it, it's crazy. Like, you take a look at what it's really advocating and how it operates. It's not very helpful.
No. I mean, it's schizophrenic.
It is.
It's punitive.
I write it down a lot and take a look at it.
Well, yeah. I mean, with all gratitude to Ms. Katie, the JYN exercise is really a profound way of exercising the inner sanctum of self-criticism.
I don't even have to do the work. I just write down all the insanity that's swirling around when I'm beside myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Michigan, have a week there, first day, first 2 days, fucking freaking out. What did I do? I'm going to be here all week. I'll never make it. This is blah, blah, blah.
Oh, sure.
Just wrote it all out.
Yeah.
And then had a great time.
Okay. And the writing it all out and the intelligence and the capacity to write it all out may have contributed to your having a good time or may have had nothing to do with it at all, and it's impossible to say.
At least it's something to do when the head is on.
Yeah. If your head's on fire and you've got a pen,
write it out.
Ink's not that expensive.
It doesn't. It's funny because it's not that strategic. It doesn't hide.
Yeah.
Just like it just lays all the insanity right at your feet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It'll hide if you try to spiritualize it or edit it or whatever, and I'm pretty good at just barfing it all out on a piece of paper. If I ever die and they decide to like look at all these pieces of paper, they will know I was crazy.
We're confident.
We got it right now.
Yeah, we're confident. We don't need any more evidence than you've already given us.
And
you know me too well.
In this court, Check. It's the highest compliment, so you're good.
Yeah,
in the lose, right? You already lost a reputation. Check.
Yep, check.
Good.
Crazy, shitty reputation, unreliable. Check, check, check.
Abusive.
Send money to Africa. Check. Ah. you can't easily avoid the pushy and streaming nature of your own interest and attention.
Try to do it in the morning when it wakes up. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
You might get a respite if you can go back to sleep for a little bit, but eventually you're going to wake up and
yeah.
on you like flies on shit.
Oh, yeah, it's on you. So meditation, all the many forms.
It's like getting high. Like the second that that happens in the morning, you're like...
yeah. I'm up, got to
no,
snort.
Is that not what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm up, got to medicate. Yeah, it's me again. I need something.
Forget the Fruit Loops.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone else is on antidepressants, you know, you got to do something.
There is a mechanical side to the yogic adventure of liberation. There is. There are many mechanical, you know, call them interventions or practices. Many of them.
Better than pulling a sheet out your ass?
That is pretty much the high end.
A towel or a sheet? Something like a good scrub would be cool, but a towel, a sheet's...
No, it is a very fine, usually silk.
Oh, that's
more like a scarf, but like a 20, 30, 40 foot scarf. Oh. Yeah. And you just, you just slowly eat it and swallow it down and, yeah. Takes a while. The transit time takes a while.
You write little messages for the
you just hold this piece while you're doing that, right? So it doesn't...
Yeah. Love notes for the parasites as it goes by.
Yeah.
And they can write back.
The movie Crumb, which was kind of a more or less somewhat comedic documentary of Robert Crumb's life and his two brothers, who were both bananas. They were Robert Crumb was the author and the and also the illustrator,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Of what magazine? What was
Mad
the principal?
Magazine?
No. I mean it's a cultural icon. I can't imagine. I just kind of slipped my mind.
Answer me.
If Jamie were here, we'd have the answer in an instant.
What's the topic of the magazine?
Cracked.
It's an adult. It was an adult magazine that dealt with, you know, rompous, raucous sex with exaggerated bodies. I really do apologize because this one I know. You can look it up, of course. Anyway, the film, it's worth seeing the film. Because one of the brothers, the older brother, I think, was a San Francisco, you know, kind of yogi. I mean, there's footage of him sitting on a bed of, or an asan of nails on the street, you know, sitting on a nail platform. And during the film, he actually does that swallowing thing.
So it was the guy's brother, though. No?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. And then the other brother is kind of slightly dissociative and not with it and still lives with the mother. I mean, it's just, it's a very good movie. It's so sorrowful. Their father apparently was, you know, kind of a madman, abusive type from the, you know, 50s or whatever that mistreated all three sons. And so a lot of their... colorful nature, you know, was a compensatory for that. Which could be said about most everyone in Trump's cabinet. Yeah, victims of abuse. Anyway, I'm sorry, that was political. You see, anything that we promulgate, even of a pleasant spiritual nature is going to be instantly maligned by your mind. Because that's what a mind does. It, you know, it maligns everything that comes into its purview. That's the nature of objectification and subjectification converted into etheric experience through the movement of association. That's what one's, you could say, persona is made of. The curious tapestry by which you frame yourself, right, as a creature in the world, and how you've figured out how to compensate to cope with an underlying chaotic madness that no one seems to be talking about. So we're just all suffering from this mass hypnosis of compensatory failed strategies while imagining that we're keeping our world or the world glued together. And that is a fucking schizophrenic. But to get under it, you know, to really to get under it and see it, own it, right? Recognize it in one's own psyche. That's not so easy to do. Because we are all masters at evasion, avoidance, minimization, blame, accusation, justification, anything at all to get out from under the intimate confrontation with ourselves as a field of random chaos. Because that can be unsettling or enthralling. I mean, it depends on how you roll. We will turn to psychics and mystics and authorities of a million kinds, all other than ourselves. You know, whether it's the big authority figures like God or Jesus or Muhammad, perhaps Abraham, you know, what was his name? That Sufi king.
Rumi.
No, he was a, no, not him. I mean, he was cool, but.
Hafiz.
No, I know.
He's batting zero for zero.
I got doodle.
Sam, where are you?
I got doodle. Guru, Guru Nanak.
Oh, Nanak.
Guru Nanak.
Nanak.
Nanak, who's there?
Yeah, Nanak, who's there? Right. Zap Comics.
There you go.
Oh. Zap, sorry.
It's
Zap Comics.
Over with
yeah. And their various offshoots. Zap Comics. Yeah. Mr. Goodbar says, go fuck yourself. Do it today. And he's not shitting around.
It's like a graphic novel, right?
Yeah. Graphic adult comic book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I got it. Zap and Nanak. Zap and Nanak. Zap and Nanak. And they are the same. Though most Sikhs would beg to differ, Sufi. By plunging a sword through my chest.
Don't give the universe ideas.
Yeah, really. We think that there is actually something to discover. Or we beg, pray, hope, insist, lament, right, cathart, that there is something to discover, that there's a resolution for my neurosis, my anxiety and apprehension and depression and how everything bullies me and I can't fight back and whether I do have or don't have free will and, you know, the power of manifest destiny. And there's not. There's nothing. So the message of the sage, you know, depending on how it's delivered, how it's tickled, can come at you and does come at you from, you know, a thousand unsuspecting ways. Well, I mean, you could say your day-to-day life experience is just jacked with messages from the sage. And yet our capacity to misunderstand or misinterpret, not notice them, keeps us the same. We remain the same through a inadvertent and involuntary refusal of all of the hello trumpeting messages that we get day in and day out, a million times a moment, that actually suggest to us the presence of what we might call a complementary but also somewhat right other kind of reality than the one that we think we're living.
You get little blips, man. Little, like, hey, it's cracking me up. I'm getting a lot of them.
Blips are good. Yeah. So that's, you see, there's where you have both the mechanical skills that you can so-called cultivate or contribute to or participate in as concerns a novel appreciation on the lookout for all of the blips, all of the messages, all of the trumpeting that's actually coming into your present experience, which are wormholes to see through the imagined tapestry of continuity, the imagined tapestry of self. Yeah, we're bathing in it. We're bathing in it. Then there's the grace aspect. And these, of course, are not mutually exclusive, because even your capacity to participate in a cultivation is, you could say, a kind of a grace. Right? So it's very strange to look at the yoga of liberation in all the forms that it can be pursued and see both the grace or the improvisational and impersonal aspect of it just showing up in your experience that holds your attention and then encourages you to think or feel a different way by grace. And because that has shown up by grace, you could go chicken or egg on it and say, well, it has shown up because I've been given a lot of attention to the yoga of radiant presence or noticing or traveling lighter or selfing or, you know, my recovery pals or, right? And you don't, you chicken or egg? I mean, you know, eat a chicken, that feels right.
Have a chicken, then eat a chicken, this feels right.
Play with a chicken, eat a chicken, that feels right. You don't know whether you're chicken or egg. I mean, we know you're fucking chicken. But you might be egg.
That's a foul thought.
That's a foul thought. The cessation of the habit of processing present experience through anticipatory memes. As that habit softens, which is what mindfulness practice is, I could take a risk, is designed to encourage. Mindfulness practice is encourages you to simplify and simplify and simplify so that you begin to see meaning, feel meaning, meaning notice the irrefutability of the dynamism of consciousness, of intimacy, of present experience, and be relieved of the habit to turn mystery into self. if you walked up to many of your friends or family or acquaintances and said, well, have you been relieved of the habit of turning mystery into self today? I don't know if they'd know what you were talking about.
If you said, hey, have you done some work on yourself? Are you like getting someplace, starting to understand things? And like, are you, how are you doing with that? They'd be like, they relate to
that. They could relate to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that has become, let's just say, socially acceptable, right? Yeah. Within the conversational lexicon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing work on myself.
Yeah.
I'm getting there.
Yeah. That's right. Right. But if you lean into the thrilling and terrifying intimacy of cessation, which turns out to be this, not other than this, not elsewhere, but, oh my goodness, right? Then something very strange happens to call it the familiar human, right, dynamic. It's breathtaking to be relieved of a destination that you've either been in or are heading toward. It's breathtaking to be relieved of desire and complaint, or the preference for an alternate future. You know, we want this to turn out to be what? Loving, thrilling, satisfying, compassionate. We want just, that's a good one.
Fair.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah.
Profitable.
Right.
Profitable. Yes. We want. And you can see how defensive we become. If that wanting is challenged.
What the fuck is my wanting?
Yeah, questioned, right? If the wanting itself is challenged or questioned, or if someone takes the risk to introduce you to a quality of inhabiting your present experience which is not driven by want or satisfaction.
Sometimes things happen when you're not even looking, you know.
Pretty much everything.
Not looking for anything, right? Then you notice something's different. You know, like, I don't know, I felt good after being... visited my friend Mike in the hospital.
Uh-huh.
It's like, wow, I can really be present with this. And I just started singing on the way home, and it's about love and this and that. And it's like, well, this is fun.
That sounds like a new age win.
And then I'm at a merge point, and this van just cuts, you know, doesn't let me in. It's like, you know, there's this moment of intensity, and I'm still in that space, and I start loving the van. It's like, what the hell's going on?
Wow, I really am changing. Fuck, this shit works.
I said, I can't be pissed right now. It's really fun. I was wishing him well and all that shit.
Yeah.
But I think where this, whatever this is, Dave, would get in thick about it is like turn it into a process.
Oh, yeah.
Now, can I repeat it? Or
Dave is the process.
Can I apply it? But it was nice to organically witness that.
Yes.
I could not be angry at that moment. I couldn't be pissed.
Wow.
In that moment.
Yeah.
Because I was too busy really enjoying sound and the dance of words and just a certain happy presence.
Yeah.
Of course, it didn't last. But
thank goodness for that.
Today was shit. Yeah.
There you go. Today was the winning day. Yesterday was bullshit. Today was the day you get mileage.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's right. The hangover, right?
Oh, yeah.
The love hangover.
It has to give you a break every once in a while so you don't kill yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get a break like that every once in a while so you don't kill yourself and you think, oh, I'm on a roll. This shit's actually working for me.
You're like, no, we're just giving you a little bit.
And then when you least suspect it, the Divine Mother grabs you by the scruff of the neck and goes, boom, 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 boom. Eat shit, motherfucker.
That's right.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. Did you have a nice day for a few minutes? Well, guess what? Boom, 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 boom.
That's right. Right. I held the story.
Yeah, yeah. No, these are my friends.
Yeah, really.
I just want to make sure
But Ma, I didn't curse out the van. That was great. Boom, boom, boom. Supplicate as you will. She's just not interested in the progress that you're making. Oh, did you make a little progress? So glad to hear it.
You get too happy, you get too content, and you got no reason to look.
But what's nice is I didn't make a formula out of it. I didn't try to, you know,
good
make it like this. Okay, now I'm going to start doing something intentionally.
I'm going to visit everybody. I'm going to visit people I don't even know in the hospital and sing on the way home, and I'm going to win.
He's going to turn into a candy store.
That's right.
Yeah, you remember Mike. He popped in on this a few times.
Yeah, how's Mikey doing? Why is he in the hospital?
Stroke.
That's not good.
Yeah, he's got most of his faculties back, but he wishes he didn't so he doesn't have to go back to work.
He hates work that much.
Yeah, that's hates most
Boeing.
Of
he hates Boeing.
We're all maniacs.
He says, I'll have a lisp and
try to
be off
work. We just don't understand that it's self-proof.
So I guess it's too early for him to contemplate retirement or do consulting or something.
He just doesn't want to go back to Mesa, Arizona either.
They send him there?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, so that's a lonely town, I bet.
Anyhow, he's,
right.
Yeah.
Well,
talk about just being present.
You
know, you're contemplating your death. It's like, oh my God, I'm going to die. So, oh no, I'm still here.
You know, if he'd spent more time at the Night Sky Sangha, he wouldn't be in this mess. Right. He'd probably be in a worse one.
He could have just picked up smoking dope.
Yeah.
Gives him a headache.
What's wrong with pizza and beer and the occasional marijuana cigarette? Listening to some Boy George. I mean, come on.
Actually,
life is good.
He ingests doses of Ken Wapnick.
Uh-huh.
I know Ken Wapnick.
And the Course. Even though it confounds.
He's a Course in Miracles imbiber.
Boy George.
Yeah.
Boy George and a Course in Miracles.
Boy George. Guru Nanak.
I'll take
Sap Comics.
I don't know if
Boy
I know
George.
Boy George.
Course in Miracles.
The one that's on the radio.
You come and go.
Well, that song is what I'm talking about.
Come a chameleon. Beth's been on a Boy George kick lately because he's on Celebrity Apprentice and could actually win.
Really?
You watched
Boy George
yesterday.
Boy's not a boy anymore.
Like, what does he look like?
Yeah. Probably
an old man. Yeah.
Looks good.
Oh, really? It was amazing. And on the other guy, Letterman.
He's been around that long?
He came on all made up. He was like 22 or 23. And it was so weird. That interview would never happen now. Johnny Carson saying, oh, I'm from Nebraska. Why are you dressed up? It was like what he had to put up with was so awful looking at it now.
Yeah. Yeah, he was in his day, he was truly
androgynous.
Pioneer, pioneer of androgyny,
and
right.
For a long time or something as well.
Yeah. Mindfulness bell.
Just on my ding-a-ling.
What's another Boy George song? Is there any other well-known?
He has a nice voice, but I don't know. Some other big one. I forget. You made a few records.
Yeah. Culture Club, yeah. Guru Nanak.
Yeah. We should have a fire one day when it's warm during the day and just play Boy George.
I'm in.
Boy George party.
I'm in.
Can we dress up?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the only way you'd be let in.
Okay.
Yeah. Yay, face paint, Boy George party. We got so many cool things that are going to happen.
We never do anything.
Yeah, we never do anything. We got pizza and beer. I mean, that's kind of a novelty.
Panera Bread. Let's just go to Panera.
Yeah, fuck it. We'll just go to Panera Bread and eat a almond roll. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Let's just go to Panera.
That's right.
Found myself in Texas in front of a big pot of chili sitting outside.
Nice. How'd you like that Super Bowl game? Jesus, let's not talk about that.
It's supposed to be a Super Bowl party. Nobody
who won?
Interested.
Perfect. I didn't even know who's in it.
Yeah, you're lucky.
Somebody won, I'm sure.
Yeah, someone did win.
Somebody lost.
Someone won, someone lost.
The ball went back and forth.
Yeah, looking at it that way, I feel a lot better.
Someone felt fans said, here, take it.
Yeah, just take it.
I don't watch it, but they put all the Super Bowl commercials, a bunch of them on YouTube.
Yes, so you can watch the commercials.
Watching YouTube, like, randomly, you got to see, like,
which you do.
I did see the one with the girl with one leg. Watching the, all these guys doing stuff with one leg or missing arms and stuff.
Oh.
And the message was what? Eat a Dorito.
I know, it's like, wow. You look at this stuff, you're like, oh my god.
So are they saying that, like, you can grow back a limb by eating Doritos?
No, you'll lose a limb.
You'll lose a limb by eating Doritos?
You'll do a lot of amazing shit, don't worry about it.
That's right. Huh. Do whatever you want.
Wow, those corporate sponsors, they are pretty bold.
Like, yeah, how much money did you spend on that? Yeah. At least, like, Hyundai sent me an email that was like, you know what, instead of spending a shitload of money on a commercial, we, like, they, like, brought the show to a bunch of military people and, like, set up a really cool thing. I was like, it's kind of at least, you know, hey, we fed some starving people.
Mm-hmm.
What was it, $5 million for 30 seconds?
I don't know.
Could feed a lot of people.
I like the Arby's commercial. Arby's is like, yay, women, girls, or whatever.
The wage gap's a myth, though.
The what?
The wage gap, it's a myth, though.
What do you mean?
Like, the women don't actually get paid less than men. They're doing the same thing.
Okay.
Because people actually, like, go and say, like, oh, really? You pay your women workers, like, less? Like, that's illegal. And they're like, actually, after we did all the calculations, they get paid the same amount as men.
In my experience, I get paid the same. But I will say, I'm in a very high-paid profession. And in certain enclaves, there aren't many women.
Engineering,
no,
right?
It's just a little harder to get in there. And they, I think, hire a few to make it look good.
I find myself in meetings with all men all the time. And I mean some big-ass meetings. Some of the ones that are, like, funny little niches, mostly men.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I dated a senior RF engineer, and she was tough in a man's world.
What the hell, engineer? I have no idea.
Oh, boy. All right. What are we doing here?
Back to that.
Coming back.
This is the mechanical side of the yoga, right? The drifting into anecdotal mirth and the so-called coming back. There is, if you are fortunate to give it a certain amount of attention, there is a noticeable and discernible, dare I say, reliable textural difference between getting in a mirth canoe or simply being right presently attentive. Going riding with Pocahontas in your mirth canoe, which could be quite lovely. While she's singing Karma Chameleon.
This is obviously a male-dominated scenario.
Well,
but Ryan probably has some kind of Pocahontas.
No, you want the funny thing?
Pocahontas is steering.
Ryan has alternate facts.
Oh yeah, she's got a thing.
It was the Antifa protesters, right? Were made a video and they said that, like, you know, they were fighting, you know, this, you know, patriarchy and this and that, and blah blah. And then they found themselves, like, And then we noticed that naturally the men were outside practicing with slingshots and crossbows, whatever weapons they were using.
And the women were making soup.
The women were inside making signs and making Molotov cocktails. And I thought, wow, the patriarch has really got us too. And I was thinking, maybe like men and women just aren't exactly the same. Like they don't have the same type of brain.
Yeah, right. Right. We'll make the serious explosives. You go play with a slingshot. Okay. Good idea. I'll just end up blowing myself up.
We're just trying to keep you guys busy. Outside. Mm-hmm. Go.
Yeah. There's a mastodon that way. Go. Go.
We'll let you know when we need you.
Really?
For one reason.
Right. Yeah. So much quieter around here now that they're gone. I hope that hunting trip lasts a while.
Yeah.
So there's the mechanical and the grace element of your present experience. And your present experience is not mutually exclusive, meaning that you can be in a mirth canoe with the, you know, a partner of your choice at race and gender. And you can either be the engine in the front of the canoe or you could be steering. Depends on, you know, where you want to be. And that's how you could say we typically function, is in an abstract preoccupation with mirthful, anecdotal storytelling, with greater and lesser degrees of focus and attention and staying power.
But it isn't about, let's like really get all intense and practice and never go off track. Like, that doesn't.
Thankfully, that's impossible, so it wouldn't be really worth your time.
It's just another mind fuck.
Yeah.
You're sure that you're going to, like, I'm going to stay on track here.
That's why these are not mutually exclusive. The mirthful presentation of phantasm is on tap. Comes with the, you know, the gift, dubious gift of consciousness.
You don't have to ask for it inside.
No. And curiously, though it may seem distant and impossible, the liberation aspect of present experience is present in equal measure. That's the, you could say, the puzzle. To see that the liberation side of the coin is in equal measure to the mirthful preoccupation.
Equal value, equal insight, equal, it's the same thing. Right?
Yes, it's the same.
It's always saying it's the same.
Yeah.
Like, if you think that, oh, holy shit, you're rocking my world, look at this, is any better than the sidetrack stuff and distraction?
Both the mirthful preoccupation of daydreaming and the, you know, the wee small voice of silence as a clumsy metaphor for liberation are of equal measure because they are the same. Being inebriated with mirthful preoccupation seems to create a sense, even though it's rather a fallible sense, of individuation, durability, time, space, justification. Yeah. Well, let's say up to a certain so-called point in one's adult life, young or otherwise, you have become somewhat familiar with what mirthful orientation has to give you. You've seen pretty much what it promises to give you. Not much, nothing quite new there as concerns yourself. Experiences and circumstances can, of course, be novel, like a ride to Peru or a ride to Ohio, right? Or going to Panera, even though it's within your local purview, could turn out to be kind of a novel event, depending on how you feel it and how you see it. The companion consciousness is punctuated by the cessation of, may we say, involvement with mirthful fancy. And may very well reveal itself as cessation and nibbana. Which is not so easy to talk about, because it's only in the mirthful field that we can play with the thrill and, you know, frustrating pageantry of metaphoric implication through language, right? Which is assignment, naming. Yeah. Whereas cessation is not saying anything. It's not enrolling you in mirthful distraction. As a dynamic and sentient being, like any bacterium that can tell the difference between a food source and not a food source, or a safe space and not a safe space, that bacterium will tend to gravitate toward, right, conditions where its thriving is encouraged. Yeah. So similarly with this so-called yoga, as your discernment and cultivation by grace and mechanics sees the impossibility of cessation firsthand, you will naturally gravitate toward it, back toward it. You'll find a quality of, call it nourishment, or call it wonder, or call it innocence, or sacred incredulity. And you just see how much more fun it is to rest in cessation than to habitually confound yourself with mirthful fantasy. We learn about it through conversation. You could say various kinds of study and reinforcement, and the willingness to expose ourselves to it, to sit in it, sit as it. And it therefore becomes real to us.
some hits lately, just like laying down to rest, which is kind of, I'll lay down to rest in the afternoon, you know, I just need to rest and rejuvenation, maybe 15 minutes, half an hour. And I had a bunch of hits in that state. And it is a more of a relaxed, let's set down all the doing and you're going to just settle in.
Yes.
More present in my body, but it's like, this is no different than when I get on retreat to some of the people that I've studied with in seemingly altered states. It's like, this is no different. I could be in Palm Springs in between the morning and afternoon sessions with Peter.
Yeah.
Like, it's got the same texture, the same flavor. I'm like,
Yes, that's the gift of it. That you could say is the reason why one would be wise to go on such a retreat if you could afford it or participate in whatever salons may be local to you for low cost, to reinforce your familiarity with the gift of cessation.
The howling wind, I said this before, but I've gotten a lot of hits on having been in the desert with Peter a bunch of times. Like, there's that just wildness of the desert, which I've not been exposed to it that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a texture and a flavor and a sense to it. It's like peeking at me here occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not location as much as it is a remembrance of what that flavor tastes like. Fuck, it's always it. Always.
Well, that's why this, you know, liberation game is a confidence building exercise or a confidence game in the other implication.
It's stalking, man. It's always stalking. Come on, but you can't hide.
Yeah, you know, you don't necessarily want to be dependent on some place or someone else for this intelligence to make itself known to you.
Yeah, you had said like last week, like, now, thinking back to it, it was just like the most basic cliche I've probably heard like 30,000 times. It was just like, you know, this is it right here. Like, if you're not paying attention, like, you're missing it, like, right now.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know, just noticed like a texture of like fullness mixed with like a, I don't know, just like an all-encompassing feeling, like this, like that. It's like the end of the line or end result or end goal, and that sort of.
Yeah.
Carry with me outside then too, along with like my daily activities and such.
Mm-hmm. The revelation of inclusivity is stalking you, and like any good poison, it's working its way through your system. So the what may have appeared to be a very occasional taste of, you know, a kind of a numbing, curious silence, then actually is on tap.
And there really is like a stunning level of, it's just like, I don't know.
Yes, there is a stunning level of I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, when cessation gets legs and you were invited to rest in it, you know, this companion realm of profound dynamism and subtlety and paisley tapestry of consciousness upon consciousness upon consciousness, that gate opens. it's very difficult to see that gate or to dwell in that realm when we're so occupied with mirthful anecdotal hypnosis. So again, from the both grace element and the mechanical element, you become acquainted with the portal of cessation. Then without any effort or justification, you learn how to rest in it. And it's very generous. It's very gracious.
Yeah, it can seem to like blink out of focus and you're just like in some story or whatever, just like so yeah. So quickly.
Oh yes.
Effortless.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So you could see attention or awareness, if it's going to what we refer to as mind, it's easy for it to be tripped up by anecdotal distraction. To catch wind of cessation, that's a felt sense. So the yogas that encourage, you know, body-oriented reinforcement are useful up to a point, because the felt sense we're talking about is even transcendent of what we would call, you know, one's physicality. It's more luminous.
But it's helpful to settle into the physicality, to settle that constant mind, just settle a little bit. Just settle quietly.
Any handle you can find.
Yeah.
Without, again, pressure and, yeah. You know, blah, blah, blah. Any handle you can find, which... Yeah. Right?
It's like you get quiet in a different kind of quiet way. Not in a noisy, let's get quiet, mind-based way. You just
right.
Get quiet in a different way.
Yes.
And you can
yep.
You can sense into it
uh-huh.
from that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that quality of cessation has a, again, for fun, for a little bit of animus, has a gaic sensitivity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're, whoa.
Yeah,
thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. See you.
And it or my existence is just the most damnedest confounding thing ever. It's like,
uh-huh.
Just baffling.
Baffling, yes. Pure bafflement. Yeah. That's what entraps us. You see, the habit to keep making sense of pure bafflement is concerns myself. And then you could say the compensatory denial that's necessary to enroll in sense making keeps us entrapped, which you could say is a more subtle launch pad for civilization than the mere storing of grain. Yeah, yeah. Civilization's not just the storing of grain. It's we're looking at, you know, the how consciousness shapes its own experience in a so-called animate, right, realm of creaturehood that creates the roar of, right, civilization. Yeah. That's why I would say a salon like this is actually very friendly to Guy McPherson's, you know, anti-civilization agenda, but I don't think that he he doesn't groove with this. You don't hear it in his narrative. He's not offering the message that you might be lucky to hear from a sage.
Well, he's attached to his message.
Yeah,
he's, attachment to anything like that shuts out.
Yeah,
the possibility of not knowing what the hell this is and what's going to.
Yes.
Happen or is happening.
Yeah, his response to that, his name's Scott Johnson, his response to that guy was like, wow.
Childish.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah.
This dude.
Well, there's a certain, eighth grade narcissism still alive and well in McPherson's psyche, despite his, grief training. Yeah, right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Which, you know, that's to be expected. Well, for a snowy Thursday, you know, we gave it our best shot.
Thanks for the pizza. There's two pieces. You want one?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming. Thanks to everyone at home that's listening. Oh, that's zero viewers. I'm sorry.
Or raise